Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me as always is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Jocelyn. As we talked about pre-show, I'm going to break the fourth wall. Fourth wall? Can you do that in a podcast? We talked about this pre-show about the show Knuckles, and I gave you two options. I said, you can take your headphones off for 60 seconds. Give me 60 seconds or whatever. And then you were like, no, I'll listen to the conversation, but you'll only get 60 seconds. So we went with that option. I think that's fair.
So your time starts now.
All right. So the Knuckles television show. It's not great. It's not great. It's not bad.
No?
It's like, look at it this way. Like you have a series that is six half hour episodes. There's no Jim Carrey. There's no James Marsden. Mm-hmm. James Marsden is like literally like, oh, he's out of town. And like, okay, he's out of town. But then the deputy also goes out of town. Like, who's actually taking care of the city? Because there was only two cops that was established in the movies. Yeah. So, but the idea of Knuckles training Wade to be a warrior, it kind of feels like a 90s, not only a 90s video game adaptation, but also like a 90s comedy. Like it tries to go back to that feel. And I think it's got a lot of hits and it's got a lot of misses. And it's kind of clunky and it's kind of, you know, but it's great for kids. Like the kids enjoy it. Like, well, let's watch Knuckles. But I still think the movies are better. But trying to have six episodes of like something focused solely on Knuckles is like, I mean, it feels like we're stretching a bit, you know? Anyways, that's where I'm at with Knuckles. It's okay.
That was pretty good. That was pretty close to a minute.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to respect everybody's time, you know, like, we got a lot to talk about.
We do, including, well, so we're both watching Fallout and speaking of video game adaptations. And so I think we'll be talking about that in a full, like, spoiler 8-episode arc look at what was going on in that show. We're going to do that next week. So this is your warning. If you haven't finished Fallout, then make sure that you do before you listen to episode 602, which will be, again, next week. We're going to, just kind of deep dive and talk about our thoughts on the show. So if you don't want to, I guess, be spoiled, then this is your warning. Go finish the show before we talk about it next week. And in that vein, Ryan, you're also playing Fallout.
Yes. Yeah. It's funny putting a spoiler warning out for the Fallout TV show. Like, we also need to finish it. Like,
Well, yes, yeah. That's why I said next week, because I have one episode left to go, and I think Ryan, you've still got a couple. So we're pacing ourselves, like because everyone basically in the first like week or so was like, oh my god, Fallout's so good, Fallout's so great, it's so amazing, and so I was like, well, if it's so amazing, but there's only 8 episodes, like yes, I could watch them all in one day, but also I could spread it out and enjoy it longer. So yeah, I've been taking my time with it.
Yeah, I've been trying to take my time with it as well, and I tried to I did try to watch it with Ashley, and she was just like, it's too goofy. It was too goofy for her. Like it was too far out in terms of like the narrative and you know, just like the post-apocalyptic, and it wasn't even the violence. I think it was just like, it's too goofy, it's too like out there. And I'm like, it's not really grounded. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening in it that's pretty fantastic, you know. You've got like just the giant suits of armor and the ghoul and all that, and just the post-apocalyptic world.
Well, don't show her Borderlands then.
No, I don't even think I'm gonna watch Borderlands. Like, I don't even think I'm gonna subject myself to that.
I was like, I don't know if goofy is a word that I would use to
I don't know, like, but you can kind of like, but if it's not your thing and you kind of are watching
I get that, I totally get that,
and it's like, it is a bit goofy, you know, like it's like even the first episode when you have Lucy talking to the guy in the diaper about like, I keep putting sand in there and no water comes out, you know? And like, it fits within the universe. We enjoy the vibe that they're laying down, like the humor and the world. And I think if you can't connect with that, it does appear to be, like not your thing, but, which is
dumb.
Fine.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, sure. Dumb, goofy. Like, I get it. Like, and there's stuff there's content that, you know, I'll watch and I'm like, man, this is silly and dumb. And like, who's this person and why are they yelling at that person? It's like, no, you don't get it. You got to watch all the episodes and read the books. It's like, okay, I'll get right on that. So anyways, all that said, I'm watching it on my own. And as I, when I watched the show, I was like, okay, I really want to play Fallout. Cause like, that's the vibe I'm getting. It's like, I really just want to play Fallout. So I go to play Fallout 4. I waited for the patch. I got it all installed. I own it on PC, so I figured I'll play it there. I haven't resubbed a Game Pass yet, so I'll play it on PC. I reminded that playing, we were talking about this pre-show as well, just like video games from when we started the show, like in the first 5 years of the show, which Fallout 4 was one of those games. It came out in 2015. I'm reminded that all games on PC, like at one point when they came out, were for PC, to the extent that there is, when you launch it from Steam, I'm playing with a controller and I'm like sitting on the couch and I've got big picture mode activated and I hit okay, launch. And then like one of those launcher pops up and it's like options, play. And it's like, oh, I got to go get the wireless keyboard and hit play or make sure the options are all set. So it was an experience that I'm reminded of, like, oh, that's right. You know, previous to, I think maybe even the last 3 or 4 years, PC games were PC games and they had like a mini launcher when you launched it so you could change the options before you booted up the game.
Yeah.
So I was reminded that this is a game that came out, you know, almost 10 years
ago. A while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't feel that far away, but, you know, it checks out. You get in there, like it is a 10-year-old game. I loaded up the patch. I also just installed, like they have, a high resolution texture pack. And I will say this, there's a really cool thing about like taking the settings and just like not caring and just like ratcheting them up to the top and having it run 60 frames per second, no problem. You know, big screen TV, 1440p resolution. I did have to kick it down from 4K. Oh, woe is me. But yeah, it looks, plays, you know, about as you remember it. There's some crashing. There's some leaking that causes load times to be longer the longer you play. I don't know if that's just me, but I've definitely had like load times of upwards of 2 to 3 minutes.
Oof.
Specifically when I'm trying to leave like an environment. And I guess if there's combat happening outside of an environment and you try to load back into the overworld, it will take quite a while to load. And I've experienced that, but all that to be said, like while all that's happening, I'm like, you know what? Instead of checking Twitter on my phone while this is loading, I could be watching Fallout. So I'll like exit it, load an episode of Fallout. It's like, ah, that's what I needed. That Fallout vibe, like that I'm not getting in the game because the game is this open world experience and it's so spread out, especially early on in the game. So it took me about 4 to 5 hours of actually playing it to like really get back into Fallout because I never finished it. I had 50 hours in. I loaded that save to see where I was at, and I guess I was at the Institute, which is maybe the last quarter of the game. People in Discord probably remind me. Like the Institute is kind of like the big mysterious bad in the game, and you do eventually go there and start to interact with those characters a bit. I can't remember why I stopped playing, honestly. It is, you know, 50 hours in is about the time where it's like, okay, if this isn't, you know, I'll get back to this. And then, you know, 10 years later, I have not gotten back to it.
And at that point, it's like, it's been 10 years. You have no idea the fuck is going on. So you're like, well, the last thing I can do is just start here. Like, yeah. Yes, I'm just starting over.
Yeah, I started a new character. I created a new character and I went through all the intro stuff. And I remember a lot about the intro. You know, you create your character and you have like this family and a kid and then the bombs start to drop. So you go to the vault and the whole story is that like each vault has a different, like, what you experience in the show, like each vault has a different experiment, and the experiment of Vault 111, in the game is that it was testing cryogenic freezing of humans, long-term cryogenic storage. And that's the story. You are a pre-war character. You go into like this cryogenic freezer, and then the idea is like you're whichever one you pick, like if you choose to play as a male character, your wife will be frozen with the kid. And if you choose to play as a female character, your husband will be frozen with the kid. And then halfway through, like as it's like you get frozen and it's kind of like, you know, it fades out and then it fades back in and it shows your son being kidnapped, Sean, out of the cryogenic freezer, and then your husband or your partner being shot and killed. And then there's an undetermined amount of time later that you are then unfrozen again and you kind of exit the cryogenic freezer and you're like, oh shit, last thing I remember was, you know, my partner dying and my kid being kidnapped. So the game starts with this like urgency of like, I got to find out what the heck just happened. Like you're stepping out of the vault. You have no idea what's going on. They capture that feeling really well. And you go home and you talk to your robot butler and, you know, you find out you've been frozen for over 200 years. And then the game proceeds to be like, now go do. You don't know what you're doing because like you want to find your kid. And Jocelyn, you would hate it. But like immediately you're like, okay, I should try to get my bearings and try to figure out how to find my kid. So you come across some characters and, you know, it starts out, you get a lot of options of like, I'm looking for my kid. He's been kidnapped. My partner's been killed. And then they're like, yeah, you should go to the city, Diamond City. It's the biggest city in the Commonwealth. Go there, ask some questions. Well, it turns out like that's like far away. So what do you think happens? Your character slips into the open world madness of like, I got to go do all this other shit. Oh, I forgot my son's been kidnapped and time may be of the essence.
Yeah, you know? But I don't really know because there was some more freezing that happened. So was that like 10 years ago, 10 minutes ago? The fuck is going on?
But there's that lack of urgency. There's a lot of stuff that is thrown in your face of, you know, like they introduce a lot of the factions early on. Like they introduce the Minutemen and the settling system where you can kind of create outposts and you can go help people and bring them into the Minuteman system and then, you know, creating an outpost sort of network. And then you meet the Brotherhood of Steel and Paladin Dance. And then that introduces like a whole other arc of like being part of the Brotherhood of Steel. And, you know, when you're talking to those characters, the first sort of conversations can be like, you know, I've been frozen for 200 years. I'm looking for my son. He's been kidnapped. Can you help me? It's like, oh yeah, like, you know, you could do this, this, and this, but really what I need you to do is come on these side quests with me. And it goes back to that conversation that happens in the show where the ghoul says like, you know, thou shalt be distracted by bullshit in the wasteland. But in this case, it's like it's one of those instances where they must have, I know the story behind what, like beginning, middle, end of the kid. But like in development, they had this idea of to do something with cryogenic freezing. That's a cool way to have you be a pre-war character, sort of continue onwards into the apocalypse 200 years later and still be a game that takes place after the other games. But to introduce like a kid and have that be like, you know, as a parental thing, it's like, it really breaks that immersion of like, well, I should be really just beeline focusing to find my kid. And the longer you go without finding your kid or having that information is it kind of ruins the experience of an open world game where it's like, kind of do whatever you go and do whatever you want. You know, like it's weird. So that's what I've been struggling with. And every time I kind of go down that route, I'm like, you know what? I should just watch Fallout. Let's just go watch the show. That being said, I'm having a good time with it. Like it is just, I forgot that the driving thing was to find your kid and you like really have no information on where to find Sean or whatever. And you really don't have any information, at least in the first 10 hours. But I know eventually it does start to unravel a little bit and you learn a little bit more.
Well, yeah, it's the main story, right? It's the main story in a big, huge, giant Skyrim-esque open world game, right? Like, so, you know, however quickly you get through it is however quickly you get through it. But yeah, the problem being they've done, you know, the Mass Effect 3 thing where it's like, oh my God, the Reapers are coming. The universe is ending. You got to go, 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 go. Like, oh my God, you're child was kidnapped. You got to go find him. Go, 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 go. And those kind of stories don't necessarily fit very well. It's very difficult to balance a story like that in a big, huge open world.
Yeah. Like, I'm talking to these characters and they're like, really what we need to do is we need to set up some watermelon farms. I'm like, no, I need to find my kid.
Look, yeah.
I know I need to finish this quest and set up your food source or install some water, some clean drinking water. But really, like, can't you do this while I go and try to find my kid?
Yeah.
And
you won't get the XP. So then you're going to run up against a boss you can't defeat because you haven't done enough side quests.
That happened a few times as I was sort of exploring off the beaten path, and I discovered, like, oh, this is a more difficult area.
Which I'm pretty sure was, like, the number one thing that I hated about Kingdoms of Amalur, like, thinking back, was that, you know, I kept running into bosses that were absolutely impossible because I hadn't gone and helped farm chickens, and I was just like, I hate this. I hate this so much.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what the goal in that game was, but that feeling for me is definitely, like, exacerbated by the fact that, like, the universe is ending or my child is in trouble or, you know, like, insert other time sensitive thing here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the game is still fun. I just forgot that there was that hook to it. That being said, like, VATS, the system of being able to hit a button and, like, slow down time and select specific, you know, body parts for targeting and, you know, depending on the body part you're trying to hit, like, it'll have a different percentage of whether you're going to hit or not. And of course you can, like, this was before Starfield when Bethesda didn't really have a good handle on, like, building a first person shooter. Like, it definitely feels clunky, and that's why VATS works so well, because it's like, it removes the need to to be able to aim,
to be really good.
Although you look at Starfield and you kind of think, like, okay, like, I played enough Starfield to know, like, the shooting is, it feels really solid. And I wonder if Fallout 5, like, would be it such a competent shooter that, like, VATS suddenly becomes less necessary. Still fun to engage with, but, and maybe you're going to engage with it less because the shooting is so, but I find, like, if I'm not using VATS, I'm just, like, panic spraying and praying. You know,
that's how I play every shooter.
True. That's how I play every shooter as well. Like, it's just, eventually the enemy just gets close enough and I panic and I'm like, ah, and I just mash.
That's what shotguns are for.
Exactly.
That is why I play all shooters with shotguns, is I let them get in melee range and blow their faces off.
Yeah.
That is the extent of my ability to aim.
Yeah. I mean, the VAT system is really cool. And I even was contemplating, like, looking at, like, how much it would cost to get Fallout 76. And then I was listening to Core, and they were saying that it doesn't slow down when you go into VATS. Like, everything just keeps moving at the same speed. And I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound as interesting to me. The slow motion is, like, half the fun of VATS. So
yeah.
I'm enjoying my time with Fallout 4. I don't think I'm going to get anywhere close to finishing it or to have you.
Even as far as you were?
even as far as I might try to, like, I did, this is so Ryan, I bought the season pass at some point, thinking, oh, I'll get back to it. And I have all the DLC, so maybe I might see what DLC is, like, sort of intro level, like first 15 levels, and see if I can, like, at least get to that point to play something new. but so far it's, like, it's a lot of stuff I remember, getting to Diamond City, meeting, you know, Piper and Valentine and some of the other companions that you can recruit and stuff. So, like, it is really fun. Like, I think it's in my opinion, like, just looking at the options, if you are looking to get back to Fallout because of the TV show, I have not played 76, but I think Fallout 4, story aside, like, I know a lot of people had issues with the story of Fallout 4, not even just the Sean plotline, but with some other, I guess, other elements. Like, I think a lot of people would say, like, Fallout 3 is their favorite story of, like, the Bethesda line of Fallout games. I agree, it's a good one, but that one is quite older, and New Vegas requires, like, a lot of mods for it to kind of work really well. I think Fallout 4 is the easiest one to jump into because, like, there's not a lot of work required. Just install it and you're good to go.
And it's good to go, yeah.
But if you want to get into the mod scene, I think, like, from what I've heard, New Vegas is kind of the one that has like a really good story. And if you load it up with mods, you can kind of get it to a point where it is, I don't want to say like it's playable, of course, but like at a state where you're like, I don't know, how do I put this? Like it's at a state where you're like, oh, this looks like a current game that I could play and enjoy. Like it stops being sort of a product of its time, and it's a little more approachable for the year 2024, right? Like I think Fallout 4, even it's a 10-year-old game, but it still holds up. Whereas New Vegas, like, man, I don't even know. Like I rented it from Blockbuster, so like that age.
Yeah, remember Nicole Spag from Ladies of Leet absolutely loved New Vegas. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that was all she played for a while.
Yeah, it was 2010. It was based on the Fallout 3 sort of engine. It was like the PS3 360 era. So like, you know, early HD games, I think, lose a lot of like, they don't have that like ability to jump forward with fidelity and stuff. Whereas Fallout 4 was only, previous generation, I think, like with a high resolution pack and the update they just did, it makes it, you know, it makes it stand aside like other games that are current. You know, it's definitely a game that looks like it released 10 years ago, but like,
right.
You know, it's just closer to what you're used to these days. But I think it is the easiest path if you're looking to jump in and want that Fallout experience. 76, while still is primarily a multiplayer game. I've not played it, but I hear really good things. I know it's having a resurgence right now.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple friends that really liked 76 that have played it since it came out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have not played it before. I don't know if I want to like even try to jump into that one, but I am enjoying my time with Fallout 4, and it works really well on the PC. They've done a good job of like keeping it working for current hardware. And I have a 3070, which is like not, you know, the newest video card, but like new enough that I think there were issues pre-patch on like newer generations of cards. So like it runs quite well. And and you can install the 50 GB high resolution texture pack. And I was like, is it really going to look any different? And I tried Googling it and people are like, it doesn't look any different, but no, I think it does help, you know, even if it's like a placebo 50 GB, I still thought it looked good. So that's my recommendation, is if you're feeling Fallout and you want to kind of like keep the show spread out a little bit more, even though you should finish it in the next week so we can spoil it for you.
So we can talk about it next week. Yep.
Yeah, you can spread it out a little bit by like watching and play some Fallout 4 and experiencing that game. I think it's the most approachable way to jump into the video games. But if you are like a diehard, I know that New Vegas is probably like the fan's choice of like, if you had to pick of the three, that one has like best story. But just requires a lot of mods to kind of get it up to par with what you're hoping to play, I guess. Cause it is a 2010 game. That one's 15 years old. So.
Well, I've been playing a 2024 game. Well, I guess it's not even maybe a 2024 game. Depends on how you feel about early access. It could be a 2025 or 2026 game. But I started playing, along with a lot of people, apparently, Manor Lords, which is available on Game Pass and other. I actually originally saw it in the Epic Store first. It's available on Game Pass. It is a it's kind of Civ-y. It's mostly a city builder, but there's like regions and combat and stuff. And so I'm not really going to speak too much about the combat because I haven't done it yet. I started off my first playthrough because one streamer that I really, really love, he's probably one of my favorite streamers, Hybrid Panda, basically tried the game because one of his favorite streamers tried the game and he was like, it's so much, it's so overwhelming. So I was like, okay, he basically like turned it on for 20 minutes and then went, fuck this, too much. So anyways, the thing is, because it's early access, and this is probably the earliest access game I have ever played, like there are still like visible to the user variable names and stuff. And it's very, 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 very early. There's lots of stuff that says like when you hover over things, it's like this, you know, like whip, work in progress. like coming soon or whatever, for some features and things. The like help files aren't all in there. Like, it is the earliest of early access, though I'm pretty sure it's been in development for like 7 years, but I also think it's like one dude. So anyways, it's it's really good. It feels very balanced, but it is very much like any other game. Like, I'll use Civilizations because obviously that's probably the one that everyone's most familiar with. When you start in Civ, like, it has a very, very big tech tree, but you have like the warrior, the builder, and the settler, and that's pretty much it. Like, it's very much like the options of things that you can do are restricted by what you have researched, right? And like how far along in the game you are. Manor Lords is not like that at all. It's basically like, here are all the things you can build. Go. So it is therefore very easy to fuck up. Like, you can literally like build your buildings all backwards. You can run out of like lumber without having built a lumber mill, and then you're just like, you literally can't do anything else ever. So like it is very, very easy to mess up. It is not meant for people who have never played a city builder or like a Civ game before. Like, you have to have a kind of basic idea of how things should work. Again, because there are definitely things in the help files and in the tutorial that just aren't there yet. So it took me a good, like, probably 4 or 5 hours just to kind of figure things out. Like, I played on, there's like, when you go to set up your game, there's 3 different, like, pre-built scenarios with specific win conditions. So there's one that's like, you just have to grow your city to a certain size. There's one that is, you have one competing lord who owns 2 territories, and you win the game when you take those territories from him, in one way or another. And then the third one is basically all out war. You have to conquer the map, and that's how you win. So I played the growth scenario first, and I put it on the easiest difficulty. There's 3 possible difficulties, just to get a feel for the game and figure out like what's in there and stuff. And it took me a really long time to figure things out that like, I thought I was building housing and that was it. Like, so for instance, like, you can build a tavern. You need to build a tavern in order to upgrade your housing. So there's 3 levels of housing, and you need to meet certain conditions in order to upgrade them, and you need to upgrade a certain number of plots in order to hit your growth targets and to upgrade your city. And then once your city gets upgraded, that's how you get points to go into your talent tree. So one of the things that you have to do in order to upgrade your houses is to have a tavern. The people need entertainment. And your tavern will not open its doors if you don't have ale. That makes sense. Why go to a bar that's got no beer? So
for the anyway, vibe, Jocelyn, for the vibe.
Yeah, exactly. For the ambiance. Oh. So you have to have ale. I could not for the life of me figure out how to get ale. So I built a trading post and I said, okay, I'm just going to import it, which was ridiculously expensive. Took like all of my resources. It was insane. But I'm like, I have to have ale for my tavern. And it wasn't until like probably like 2 or 3 hours in that I realized that, you know, like, I was farming barley, I was getting malt, but then I couldn't figure out how to turn the malt into ale. And it turns out you have to turn one of your houses into a brewery. And you can do that when you're at level 2 houses, you can like specialize them. And it was like this whole entire section of the game that I had just missed because like I just did not realize that's what they meant by artisans. And I was like, oh my God, like, I've been exporting all my malt and importing all my beer and losing thousands in these transactions. So so I should also say it's called Manor Lords. It's all medieval tech. So you are basically like building a castle and like defending it with like knights and spearmen and archers. And, you know, like it's very much that time period, which is kind of, I'm really enjoying not having to think further. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it feels very simplistic, but in a good way. Like, you don't need to worry about like future tech and you know, like all I'm doing is building like a hamlet, basically. Like, here's my 20 houses and my 3 farms, and you know, like, I don't know, I'm kind of enjoying the scale of it, I guess. And yeah, like, it's, I think it has the potential to be really, really good. I've already sunk a ton of time into it, a ton, and it is very addictive already. And like I say, it is the earliest early access I have ever played. It is still very, very rough around the edges, but I think it has a lot of potential to be really, really good. And like I say, so far I've only played, I played my like growth thing first, and then I tried the going up against the one other lord thing, and I upped the difficulty by 1. So I'm on like basically normal difficulty. There's like easy, normal, hard. And immediately I could tell the difference in just the way things worked. Like, when I built a well, I had to make sure that my well had water access instead of just putting it wherever the hell I wanted. And again, all of this stuff is like, there's, like I said, the 3 pre-built like scenario templates basically, but all of the options are tweakable. So you don't have to play a scenario. You can just like say what kind of victory you want and how hard each different thing is, like how many bandits are on the map. Cause that was the other thing with the growth scenario on the easy difficulty, like there was no combat. And so I was like, okay, I'll try a little bit of combat. Let's see how the whole army thing works. And, yeah, I haven't actually had to fight anybody yet, but the other guy has deployed his army and it gives you like a countdown. So it's like, okay, they will arrive in 365 days. So go. Like, oh no. And it was noticeably more difficult. Like, in the first scenario that I played, the easy growth scenario, it was like my approval rating was like 100%. I was doing amazing. And then in this second scenario I did, my approval rating's like 40%. No one wants to move to my city. And I'm like, oh shit, how am I going to make an army when I have 2 people? Because yeah, all of you basically assign your population to work in building. So like, you can make like a farm and a lumber mill and a granary and, you know, whatever. But if you only have 2 people, you can't work more than 2 buildings. So it is like, or it can get a little micromanagey. So for instance, like if I had a whole bunch of timber and didn't need it anymore, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take these guys out of the lumber yard because we've got timber we're not using and go make them gather berries or something. So it can get like micromanagey. There's no way to like prioritize where to send people or anything like that. So but like I say, it has a relatively small amount of buildings and tech tree and stuff. You just have to learn kind of through, I guess, trial and error, like what the actual resources get used for and the like production like pathways, I guess. Because again, none of that information, or like the information's in the game, but not very well, like not very obviously. And the help files leave a lot to be desired. So I think when it actually comes out, it's going to be really, really good, but I have no idea if it will come out or when. Like, this is the first game in early access I'm playing that I'm like, I don't actually know if we're going to get a 1.0. I hope so. I've seen a lot of people playing it. I had like 20,000 people watching on Twitch yesterday. So I think, it's really good. It's really interesting. I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
Yeah, I mean, and like, even if you go to their website, it's got the, like, it loads just by playing like essentially a trailer. Like, that's the above the fold that you see there, and it's this trailer. And the trailer, the marketing for it is really cool because like it is this city builder and medieval times type thing, and then it shows some of the close up interactions of characters, but then the combat as well, and like, I think it is a really good example of an early access game where it's got the building blocks. It's mm-hmm. missing a very critical thing for me to be able to play it, which is that onboarding experience of like how to properly build your town.
Yeah, there is, like I say, there is a tutorial. And so the tutorial tips will pop up and they will say, like, you can do this. This is what this building does. But it's not so much advice necessarily, or like it gives you a ton of information. But trying to figure out how all that information kind of works together is very trial and error-y. More so than it's not a very guided, even with the tutorial, it's not a very guided experience.
Right.
Which, yeah. I, again, like I say, it's not, I think for, it's not for people who've never played a city builder before or a Civ before or whatever. And you need to want to dive a little deeper into those production lines.
Yeah. Yeah. I would struggle with it. Looking at it, it looks cool. I will definitely check it out once it has more of that onboarding experience, more than just the bare bones tutorial. I think that's where I struggle with a lot of civilization types is I love them. It's just a matter of getting into them and learning the sequence. Even with Civilization, I found when I was playing it, I always left tutorials on to kind of guide me each time. Yeah. I played it, you know, because I can't remember all of that. But I it looks really cool.
Civ is really big and really complex, right? This is not that. This is much smaller of an experience, which again, I really appreciate and enjoy. But I think it is, it's really well built and it feels pretty balanced. It felt challenging without necessarily being too incredibly punishing. Even when I did things really, really wrong on easy, there was a lot of recovery mechanics. And then when I did things wrong in the normal mode, it was no, that was wrong. Now you have no money. Figure out how to make money. So, yeah, there are, I guess, alternatives. The only one you can't mess up is wood. If you don't have wood to build a lumber yard, you're fucked. You've done it totally wrong. Start over.
Yeah, no, and I think that's where I would where I would struggle is I would constantly be messing up. But I don't want to have to teach myself how to play the game. I kind of want the game to teach me, and it's early access. So I think that's a critical thing to understand. You have to know what you're getting into. But even though it's on Game Pass, if you have Game Pass, PC Game Pass, it is something that you might want to check out and understand. You might bounce off of it, but it's part of the subscription. So, mm-hmm. It's a fun experiment. But yeah, it looks really neat. I think it'll be one to watch as it sort of continues to develop. But as you said, it is one person.
Yeah, if it gets a 1.0 release, I think it will do very well. Because like I say, it does feel very balanced. Sometimes I find city builders and civs can be unbalanced and it really impacts the play. But I feel like this guy is really thought things through in a way that feels challenging but still fun and playable, you know? Yeah. So anyways, I'm really enjoying it. If you have Game Pass, go check it out. It is included with PC Game Pass, and yeah, it's one dude, which is blows my mind.
Yeah, and it's currently and you can also purchase on Steam, as you said, it's on other platforms.
Yeah.
It's 25% off and it's on sale for $40 Canadian, so
yeah,
so that's not too bad.
Yeah, no, it's really not that bad. And like I say, there's a lot of, because there's the three scenarios right now. I'm sure there will be more. But there's three scenarios right now, but you don't even need to play the scenarios. All of the settings for the game are completely tweakable, like with Civilization. So, you can set your own victory condition and what the world looks like that you're going to spawn into. So yeah, it's really cool. You guys should check it out. And also you should check out Sea of Thieves if you're on PlayStation, because it just launched yesterday on PlayStation. So this was one of the, what was it, four or five games that Microsoft announced were going to other platforms that had previously been exclusives. So yeah, PlayStation now, Sea of Thieves is available over there. So there's a huge influx of new players, which is awesome for kind of a sandboxy multiplayer game like this. And also season 12 just started, which introduced, oh my God, so many new things. There's a new type of cannonballs. There's two new weapons. There's just all kinds of good. There's a horn that you can find. I think it's called the Horn of Fair Winds, which like lets you blow into your sails so that if you're going into the wind, all of a sudden you can be going with the wind. So yeah, it's really cool. There's lots of really cool stuff in season 12. So if you haven't played Sea of Thieves lately, or if you're a PlayStation player and you want to check it out, I highly recommend it. It gets better and better and better. So yeah, go give it a try. Also, I don't know if this is a new feature or just something that I had never used before, never realized before, but you can choose as a console player to only play with other people on consoles who are using controllers. And so I've actually been doing that for the last few days, and I have never met, and maybe it's just because it's a whole bunch of PlayStation players and they're all new and they're like, oh my God, you Xbox and PC people have had the game for so long, you're going to destroy me if I'm not nice to you. But like, I have had so many alliance requests and like friend requests and like just people being super nice. Like, I don't think I've been shot at since I decided to play with only console players. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy, but yeah. That is an option, is to prefer playing with other console players using controllers if that's what you would like to do. And I recommend either that or trying out Safer Seas instead of High Seas, which is also a feature that they launched very recently within the last couple of seasons. I don't remember if I talked about it or not, but basically it lets you do your first 40 levels, and the gold earning, and so the rep earning, happens a lot slower on Safer Seas, but it's PvE only. They are not PvP servers. So if you want to just like get used to the game, see what the game is like, you can try Safer Seas, and yeah, go check it out. It's a great game. I'm so glad that it's come to another platform.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what Microsoft was trying to do by bringing more of their games to other platforms, like Sea of Thieves was the one that immediately jumped out as like a no-brainer. Yeah. You know, so I think it's great to see it on PlayStation. I'm glad that it's, I didn't realize there was like, what is it, 18 million players in Sea of Thieves or something like that?
Yeah, it's huge. It's like, it is still huge.
Yeah. And to think, it's like, I remember when it launched, like people were like, oh man, this is the death of Rare. It's like, I think the only reason Rare is still around is because Sea of Thieves is doing so well. It also means they're making like, they're not making other games. I know they have, I think it's like called Everwild or something. It was unveiled like years ago, and we haven't heard anything about it since. Obviously, they've been busy with making, this goes back to like, if you're building a game and you want to do a live service game, you either have to become a live service studio or have a live service game that kind of like sacrifices that immediate drip, that constant drip feed of content. So
yeah,
I mean, it's a double-edged sword. Like, it's great that Sea of Thieves is doing really well and it's coming to other platforms, but it does mean we're getting less Rare stuff from Rare, which is pretty rare, I guess. But I like Sea of Thieves, but I would really love to see Microsoft I don't know if Rare wants to do it, but I'd like to see Microsoft say like, hey Rare, make another Banjo-Kazooie game. Rare might not want to do that, but they've got a few studios that can probably revive Banjo. We need more Banjo. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Well, I know there's Banjo in Sea of Thieves, but we're talking about...
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my go-to instrument whenever... I know you like the drums. You know, the drums are all right, but the banjo
really adds something.
It does add something. And like three people will get that.
Yep.
We keep bringing it up, and you know, especially around Extra Life, and like, again, hopefully more people will catch on, but the drums really do add something. I mean, but only when the banjo's there.
Yeah. And I mean, if you are somebody who, and I feel like I say this every time I bring up Sea of Thieves, if you are somebody who played on launch and you're like, that game is empty and boring, the amount of content that they have added, the amount of like things you can do in the game is like astronomical, like to the point of being almost overwhelming. Like, you really have to like almost specialize or streamline your experience now, because there's just so much content to do. There's tons and tons and tons of story questing if you want to go do Tall Tales. There's all kinds of different voyages available to you now, like which voyages are like things to do in the game. So you can do them for all the different trading companies. So you can go, you know, dig up buried treasure. You can go try to find lost shipments. You can deliver cargo. You can, you know, go fight skeleton lords and skeleton ships and just all kinds of ghost ship things. And yeah, there's just all kinds of stuff to do in the game now. So if you haven't checked it out since launch, you should go check it out now. It's especially with the influx of new players, like now really is the best time because you're not necessarily going to be jumping in with a whole bunch of people who have been playing the game for, you know, 6 or 7 years and get destroyed all the time. You know, like now is the best time to join in with the wave of PlayStation players. So yeah, go check it out. Sea of Thieves. So good. I wanted to give a patron shout out to Spin, Smiley Chris, and Ridiculous Hat. Thank you guys so much for supporting us over at patreon.com/thegamersin. If you like what I do and what Ryan does over here at the Gamers Inn, I can't talk right now. I don't know why. I just must have hit my almost 10 o'clock wall. Like my brain is just not functioning anymore. But yeah, if you do enjoy what we're doing here, this crazy show that we put on, head on over to patreon.com/thegamersin to support us. That brings us to the news this week. There is going to be no BlizzCon in 2024. Are we surprised by this? I feel like I am not surprised by this.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised either. I think I would have reacted the same way if they announced they were having a BlizzCon. I was like, oh, okay, yeah. I'm not surprised by that.
I would have been surprised if they said that they were going to have a BlizzCon in 2024, because as far as I know, BlizzCon 2023 did not sell out. They no. Like usually, I remember when like I was trying to go to my first BlizzCon in 2013 or 14. And there was like a very specific time that tickets went on sale. It was like me and all my friends trying to buy like the maximum amount of tickets that you could buy because, you know, like one of you was going to get through and one of you was going to be able to complete your transaction. Like the servers were overwhelmed. Like it was crazy. That didn't happen last year. They still had tickets day of the event. So, I mean, like the interest wasn't there, and that is for a ton of reasons, I think. You know, like all these live service games, a lot of the hype around them is kind of dying. There's all the controversies that Blizzard has been a part of. So, I mean, like, it wasn't a great time. Like, Blizzard's just not the company they used to be, right? Like, they don't have the fans. They don't have the loyalty. They've shit the bed a lot. So, I feel like they just didn't have that same sort of, like, swell of interest around BlizzCon. And then on top of that, they're now part of Microsoft, right? Like, Microsoft doesn't have cons for all of their different studios. So, I mean, kind of for both of those reasons, I'm not surprised by this news at all. I think it would have been way more surprising if they came out and said, yeah, we're going to do it again. I'd be like, really?
Yeah. So in that regard, do you see it pivoting to be like strictly a fan event if they were to do another one? Like, I know they were kind of struggling with, is this esports? Is this announcements? Is this a fan event?
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I mean, original BlizzCon was like all of the fans getting together because they just love those games so much, right? And then it was like, okay, we're getting all these people together. We better give them exclusives. We better give them news. And then it was like, okay, well, now we're live streaming. So, you know, it's not really as like exclusive anymore. So then they got like the exclusive shop. It's like, okay, there's going to be stuff in your swag bags in the shop and stuff that no one else is going to be able to get. And then they moved the shop online. And then it's like, okay, well, then it became esports. And, you know, esports as a thing just started to really pick up. And they had the StarCraft, the finals and everything else. And all of the esport finals started to be at BlizzCon when, you know, they had the PvP stuff for Warcraft. They had the Hearthstone World Championship and then the Hearthstone Global Games, and they had the Overwatch stuff. And, you know, like then esports kind of started to, like, the esports program started to dry up. Like, technically Hearthstone still has a world championship, but yeah, it's the prize pool is way smaller. The viewership is way smaller. They shot themselves in the foot with that YouTube deal. Like, you know, for a ton of reasons, esports is now shrinking. And across the board, it's not even just a Blizzard thing. Like, esports is getting smaller and smaller. So anyways, if they don't have esports, then it's like, okay, what's the thing? What's the reason? And especially with announcements, with so many different titles now that are on so many different development schedules, it felt weird for them to either like delay announcements or force announcements to all line up with this like arbitrary November date. It was like, why are we doing this if we have stuff ready to go like months before? Or like for in Hearthstone's case, like their standard year always happened in the spring on their big rotation and everything else. So they're like, that's actually kind of our big time is more so in like March. So, you know, this random November date just didn't make sense for all of their different like franchises, all the different like umbrellas underneath Blizzard. So like, I don't know. In the post, they said like, oh, we're open to blah, 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 bullshit, whatever. but like, I don't really see how they do another BlizzCon, because again, like I say, like the fan base just isn't there anymore. They're not rabid. There's no blind loyalty. Like, people aren't flying from Europe to California. You know, they're kind of like, yeah, no, I'm good. Thanks, though. So I don't know. I don't think you could justify a BlizzCon now. I really don't see how you do it.
Yeah, like, I remember when BlizzCon was getting started, it was something I looked at as like, oh man, I really, really want to go. Like,
yeah.
That opinion shifted before all of the crap that was going on with Blizzard. It became like, that just seems really expensive and way too many people. I'm good.
Well, I mean, like, the other thing is, too, like, we all age, right? Like, we're older now. Like, we have kids, we have responsibilities, like, we'd have to take vacation, and, you know, like, our spouses may not be interested, which is what happened. Like, Matt came to one BlizzCon with me, but then was like, it's not really my thing. So, you know, like, I mean, I went for as many years in a row as I went because Angry Chicken was doing so well, and, you know, like, I was very invested in the Hearthstone scene, so... You know, but now that I'm not doing that, I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. No, I think, and you're right. Like, you know, I think there are other spots for those fan meetups to happen, whether it's with smaller communities or even like larger places like PAX, and where it flourishes as this. Yeah, it just, there are other spots for it. I mean, you're right, there is the PR gobbledygook of like, well, this is not necessarily the end of BlizzCon. Like, you know, this is probably their one year where they could say, no BlizzCon this year, but like, next year they'll have to rip the Band-Aid off and be like, yeah, it's no current plans for future BlizzCons. That'll be the next one.
They have a WoW expansion coming out this year, so that should be like, and it's the first in the trilogy, in the, you know, the thing, the Metzen's back, like that big announcement, like the trilogy of expansions they're doing for Warcraft. Like, this is the launch of the first one, so you would think of any year, like, Warcraft is supposed to be their big flagship, right? So if your flagship game is launching its biggest expansion from its most well-known writer, like, why would you not be celebrating that? If you're ever going to celebrate anything in person again, you know what I mean? Like, if you're ever going to do a BlizzCon, why wouldn't it be this year, given the content that you're putting out, right? So, I don't know. To me, the fact that Metzen's expansion is coming out and they're not doing a BlizzCon means they're never going to do another BlizzCon.
No. Yeah. And I mean, you look at announcements at the 2023 one, which was the Metzen's return. Here's three expansions, you know, that sort of thing. Like, they had enough there probably from all three pillars of like fan engagement. Although that was lacking, as you said, they were still selling tickets. It didn't sell out, which was like a huge deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because as far as I know, BlizzCon was never really a moneymaker for them anyway.
Right.
Given how much, you know, it cost in, you know, the space and setup and props and workers and, you know, like it never made the money, even though tickets were insanely expensive. And I think that was another thing with last year. And again, I didn't go last year. So the last BlizzCon I attended was in 2019 because it was right before COVID. And then obviously COVID went all crazy. And then last year was the first in-person BlizzCon since then. And I didn't go because I had a baby like a week before. But it was, I feel like the tickets were like in the 300s American. And previous to that, I think they'd been like $250. So like the tickets went up like almost $100, maybe more ahead. And it's like people just don't have that kind of disposable income, like in this economy. People don't have that kind of disposable income right now. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's what needs to change. Maybe, you know, like we need to get less recession-y, less depression-y, and more like, I don't know, flush with cash somehow.
Sure. Yeah. The amount of I keep seeing it, like the meme of like you know, it's like, oh, you know, money can't buy happiness. And like what one poster saw, I was like, well, if I just had an extra $2,000 a month, I could probably like eliminate some things that are causing some anxiety, you know, like bill payments and
like being rent able to afford and a home. Food. Yeah.
No, I see that, you know, like you save a little here and then somebody else comes across and like wants, you know, double that. So it's like, you're right. Like BlizzCon, they probably saw the writing on the wall in the sense that like it didn't sell out last year. It definitely wasn't going to sell out this year. There are so many other avenues to engage with fans. Even like if you look at like while trying pre-release software, like you can do betas online. You know, mm-hmm. I think a lot of companies have gotten sheepish about allowing gamers to play their stuff pre-release. And Blizzard's been burned on that specifically with, you know, Warcraft 3 Reforged and stuff. That was I can't even remember if that was playable. The stuff that they didn't end up doing. I know the trailer was the big culprit, but I think maybe the playable stuff also had some of that in it too. But it's something that companies are stepping away from, and it gets really toxic when people who play games that don't understand development play early stuff and think like, oh, well, this is, you know, shit, like this is terrible, and like go online and everything spreads so quickly now. So it's like, if there aren't enough reasons to do BlizzCon, then maybe we just, you know, let it. And, you know, is it the last BlizzCon 2023? Likely not. Is there going to be another one at some point in the future? Like at some point, I think you can never, you know, never say never, because it's all about that nostalgia. Like you could bring it back in 10 years and be like, hey, BlizzCon's back. It's a big deal. They'll sell out right away.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah.
But is there going to be another BlizzCon in the next 5 years? Like maybe not.
Yeah, you know, I think probably not. Yeah. Especially when, so Xbox is doing a showcase on the 9th and they're including Blizzard there. So like, they have other avenues now that they are part of Xbox. I'm not saying that they couldn't do, obviously they did their own announcements outside of BlizzCon already, but you know, like they have a larger corporate umbrella now that, you know, does big gaming showcases. It's not in person, but like, they're going to be included in Xbox stuff. So again, like if you're not holding announcements for BlizzCon in November, which they already hadn't been doing, then I don't know. I don't see the point of a BlizzCon, honestly. I mean, obviously seeing fans and friends was amazing, but like you can figure out another place to do that. Sorry, Blizzard.
Yeah. I mean, you can bring a laptop and play some Blizzard games if you want to. But for the most part, you're probably just going to hang out with your friends and meet some new people.
What I would do is I would go to another Nerdtacular if Scott was going to hold one, not in Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like he does a podcast with someone who lives in Ottawa. Like I keep saying, like, okay, if you would host it within the Ottawa Toronto region,
Canada edition, we would be all over that.
I would help. I would guilt Jocelyn into helping. I would likely make sure Crofton is somewhat involved. You know, arm's length, of course, but he might show up, maybe. Bo would likely help out a lot because Bo's an awesome guy. And yeah, you've got a lot of folks in Canada that could specifically help. And I think that would be really fun to do. I don't know the logistics of whether I know Scott keeps saying like, oh, I'd love to come up to Canada. It's like, well, now's a great time because his money up here. Whew,
yeah.
He'll do fantastic.
He could probably buy Ottawa.
Yeah, he could rent out Parliament Hill. I mean, They're just letting anybody park up there now, so it's fine. Oh, you know? Anyways.
Yeah, but point is, I think there are other ways to do meetups that don't involve Blizzard. And so anyways, I don't think we're going to see one in the next little while anyways, next few years. So we'll see. They didn't, like we say in their announcement, they didn't totally close the door, but... I think it's very, very unlikely. So there was an Xbox. Okay, what is ID at Xbox?
Independent like development.
Indie devs. I don't know.
Oh, anyways, indie devs. Yeah.
They had a showcase, an Xbox showcase, and there was a couple of announcements. Well, okay, one that I've seen a lot of people talking about, but I don't really think it's a big deal because a lot of their games get pretty naughty anyways. Maybe it's just my friends and I with our dirty minds, but Jackbox guys are bringing out a adults, not adults only.
Ooh, after hours.
Yeah, after dark. They're bringing out an adult themed version of their party game packs. So I think like Cards Against Humanity type stuff.
Yeah,
not meant for children.
Sure. Like I understand there are obviously like it doesn't have to be, you know, like an adults only type thing like that. That section of Steam that occasionally will pop up, you know, even though you don't mean for it to pop up. But like...
because your friend Jim recommends this game.
Oh, I don't know. Did Jim recommend something to you? Then?
No, I'm just poking.
Poor Jim.
Yeah.
That's not even true. That's slander. I think, you know, having... It's weird. Like, even the IGN article's kind of playing it up. But like, I don't think it means like, oh, it's... Jackbox, the porn edition, you know, it's probably just, as you said, you know, Cards Against Humanity and
yeah,
it's just a it's little adult, more.
Adult themes. Yeah.
Yeah. Edgy, you know, like.
Yeah.
But people drew penises and draw whatever it was
draw
called.
Anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or drawful.
Drawful. Yeah.
I don't remember what it was called. Anyways,
either way.
It was that thing where you drew stuff on your phone and then it showed it on the TV screen and everybody laughed.
Yeah. There was plenty of people drawing penises and boobs and it happened. So now it's like officially sanctioned.
Yeah, exactly. The prompts will be more risque.
Yeah. Which I think like it's honestly, it is surprising that it took this long for them to like sort of lean into that idea. Cause there are a lot of these party games that are more, you know, adult focused where it's, you know, they don't hold back. They don't like try to PG-13 it where there's only like one swear word. But I think this is a you know, the move makes sense for sure. But like, do we even, it's a 30-second reveal. Like there's really nothing, but it's out later this year.
Yeah.
But we don't know what it entails, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. We have no idea how far they'll try to push the envelope.
Probably to penises and other drawings of that regard.
Probably.
We'll see.
The only other thing from this showcase that really caught my eye, and honestly, like, I don't even know if I will play it, but it gives me kind of like Overcooked vibes, is called All You Need Is Help. And like the official reveal trailer is just so cute. It just made me smile. And like, it's a puzzle game, but it looks like you're playing, and I'm assuming it's multiplayer. Like you're playing with your friends trying to complete these puzzles and you're like, they look like little like Tetris pieces, but they're like not embroidered, like plushy.
Yarn, like crafty.
Yeah.
Yoshi's Crafted World.
Yeah. Oh, Yoshi's Crafted World. Yeah, exactly. And so you basically play with other people and try to solve puzzles and problems and stuff. But like some of the, especially later on in the trailer, where they look at some more complicated puzzles. Like at first is basically just like fit all your shapes in the shapes. But then like the further on in the trailer, it shows there's a little bit more complicated puzzles there. And it looks like you're actually like kind of like traversing a world and hitting switches and stuff. And it has that chaotic Overcooked vibe. I think this will be a really crazy fun Extra Life title, I think.
Ooh, yeah. No, that sounds pretty cool. I like the creators, the Q Games. They made the Pixel Junk Monsters games that came out previously. They used to be PlayStation exclusive, but I think now they're kind of everywhere. But it looks really neat. Like, again, like, you know, I feel bad. Like, I put this in the notes, and then I realized, like, I didn't actually watch it, and then I quickly scrolled through, and like there's some interesting stuff in here, but like nothing really jumped out to me. I think, you know, something we were talking about previously is like there's just so much video game content. I know, like, mm-hmm. I shouldn't complain. It's our whole point of the show.
There's a lot of variety.
Yeah, is to talk about video games. But because there's so much, like, everything can't be for Ryan and Jocelyn or just Ryan or just Jocelyn. Like, it's just, it's impossible for the two of us to kind of like engage and enjoy everything. Like, you know, mm-hmm. So, for me with this list, like, it's kind of also like when I get overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that's coming out, it's like, okay, like, that's great. We'll get to those when we get to those closer to release. It's like, what are we playing now? Like, I think Manor Lords, as you said, has been in development for 6 years and finally came out in early access. Like, well, cool. Like, I know other people were probably like looking forward to it. But to us, it's like that game just solely existed in, just started to exist for us in the blip of the moment of like, it's out.
Yeah, I knew nothing. It. Exactly. I knew nothing about it. I literally, I restarted my computer and the Epic Game Store popped up. I was like, damn it, why is this popping up on startup? How do I turn that off? And then I was like, oh, wait, hang on, Manor Lords, what's that?
Yeah, and I like, obviously there are games we're looking forward to, and when we get into like the E3 season and the loudest, you know, biggest platform holders will announce all their stuff, and we'll talk about it, we'll get excited about some of those, you know, some of those games, and we'll look forward to them.
And then promptly forget about them. Every year when I go through the list of like anticipated titles, I'm like, oh, these like five or six things look awesome. And I might play one of them because I just forget they exist by the end of the year.
Yeah. And there's just a lot. So but then also there's like some of the bigger players are kind of sitting this year out, as it would look like on paper, with Nintendo and PlayStation. Xbox seems to be the only one that is going to have stuff coming out, but a majority of it is traditionally their purchase studios. You have Blizzard, Activision, and Bethesda all launching projects this year. None of them are traditionally first-party Xbox stuff. You know, like, mm-hmm. It is purchase studios releasing stuff. It's still like Xbox stuff, but it's not what you would equate. Like, they haven't been with Xbox long enough that you kind of like, I know technically they're first-party, but it still feels like, well, yeah, you know, you're just buying people to release their stuff, you know, like,
yeah, I honestly forget Blizzard is under Xbox all the time. Yeah.
It'll take years. Like for Rare, yeah. it took a while, but I would consider Rare to be first party Microsoft now, both in mind and spirit. But when they first bought them from Nintendo, it took a while to kind of get there. It might have actually been Sea of Thieves, like that long for me anyways, in my mind, to like consider them not like the Rare that was purchased from Nintendo, but now like Microsoft's or Xbox's Rare, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes time. And, you know, 5 years from now, we might be saying the same thing about, you know, Activision or Blizzard titles, but it still feels so fresh that like, it's hard to, like, are we going to see like an Xbox Studios logo when you boot up, you know, the next expansion for Warcraft? Like, that's kind of wild. Probably. To think about. Yeah.
Yeah.
You bought it. You might as well put your name on it, right?
Exactly.
You spent $90 billion not to put your logo in front of it. That'd be weird. was it $90 billion? I forget. It was a stupid amount of money.
70, I think. 70? Around 70. Yeah.
Well, with inflation,
like, I feel like it was 69, but I'm like, do I think it's 69 just because, like, nice?
No, or didn't they give like throw in an extra couple billion just to avoid those jokes? I think it
probably.
Was. It's not like they're like, can you cut a few billion off the price so we don't have to deal with 69 jokes? And it's like, No, you're gonna have to give us more. Like, are you kidding? Like, maybe it was 70 something. Anyways, it was definitely not.
It was around that. It was up there.
But yeah, it's just we're in a weird time, and I mean, even our last story here with like the Nintendo Switch 2 news, like we're just so hungry for like the details for the Switch successor that like it's still rumors at this point. You know, like, when are they going to show this?
And we're getting excited about magnets.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, magnets are the future, right? Like,
well, these are electromagnets.
Ooh. Oh, yes. You know, like, it's kind of funny. Like, you know, magnets, you know, I know
how
Apple.
How do they work?
How do they work? Magnets, how do they work? Like they did, like Apple, I know Apple is not the first to do this, but they have like the MagSafe technology. And I got a new phone. And I was like, oh, it supports MagSafe. And I'm like, you know, attaching a bunch of magnets to my phone. And Ashley's like, what are you doing? They can't put magnets on electronics. Like, just watch me. And now I have so many magnets for this phone. You know, I've got like a stand magnet and I've got like a charger magnet. So like, all that to be said, like it is interesting that I think it is a natural evolution for Switch to go from those rails with the Switch, which worked really well and like led to like the sound. But now you can do like a cool magnetic snap sound. Like,
they'll still snap.
Yeah. It'll make a cool different sound though. It'll be less like ka-chunk and more like a actual snap, you know?
Yeah.
So all that to be said, like we're kind of like grasping at straws here for the Switch too, because like part of the news is like they gave, where this is coming from is like from accessory manufacturers where they let them reach into like a closed box with like sort of those like laboratory things. You know how you reach into something that's like toxic or radiation and poisoning and you're like feeling it and trying to figure out what it is. So it's like, or a mystery box, like, whoa, what's in the box, you know? So that's how they did it, is they like basically had this blind box and you just put your hands in and you touch, oh yeah, I see how now we can make this controller work for this with this Switch. And you know, it just sounds like the Switch 2 will be a slightly larger Switch, and they're upping the resolution from the screen, the handheld, from 720 to 1080p, and then the dock will support 4K. And like, it's just so, it sounds weirdly un Nintendo.
It's going to be backwards compatible, right, with the cartridges and with the controllers, though, given the fact that now we know that the Joy-Cons are going to be magnetic for the Switch 2.
Yeah.
That, original Switch Joy-Cons will connect to the Switch 2 and you'll be able to use them, but you can't, like, connect them to the Switch 2 and charge them. Because obviously, no rails, just magnets, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure there'll be accessories that, like, maybe you can convert the, you know, the magnetic rail or magnetic to rails, and you know, or you can buy like a charger to charge your Joy-Cons and have that separate from the Switch system. But I think it's good that Nintendo is, at least from the rumors, looking to basically create what is essentially a Super Switch, which is just an upgraded Switch. Because I was worried that Nintendo would do a Nintendo.
I think was everyone.
Yeah. So this is promising news. I think we're getting closer to, like, even though they said that it's slipping to 2025 launch, like we are getting closer to, I would imagine, a June reveal of some kind, or at least a June tease. Although if you think back to the Switch, like they didn't fully unveil it until the fall. I remember it was like September.
Yeah, and then it wasn't it like a February
launch? Yeah, like it was either late February or March, because I remember playing for my birthday.
Q1 anyway.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like they're going to follow that same sort of thing. I hope we don't have to wait till the fall. I kind of like the idea of like them announcing it alongside like the traditional June sort of showcase season, but I mean, it's Nintendo.
Yeah,
they might
wait. Decide if they might want to keep it quiet or not. I mean, where like the Switch was so different, right?
Yeah,
from the Wii U, that like I can see wanting to keep it secret and kind of building up that hype. But where the Switch 2 is, well, just that, you know, like it's a 2. So Yeah, I don't really know if they need to build up the hype this time around. Like, people already know what the Switch is. People like the Switch, and they're going to buy an upgraded version of it. So I don't know if you need to keep it under wraps to build the hype.
Yeah, I think it comes down to, like, whether they have, like, Switch titles in the pipeline that they want to sell Switches for people to play. But, like, there's diminishing returns to, like, not showing off a successor to the Switch, like, in fears of cannibalizing sales. Because if you hold off too long, you're going to have people that buy the Switch and then get so, you know, frustrated that it's like, wait, I didn't know there was going to be a 2. This sucks. And then get frustrated and not buy that successor. Because obviously they're going to make more money off the successor than they would.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. But I think that they have to. There is a point where, like, if you wait too long, you're going to alienate a section of the market, right, that isn't as connected. Like, you and I both know, even though, you know, we have Switches, but if anyone were to ask, like, should I buy a Switch, it's like, if you can wait.
Which at this point, with, like, nothing coming out in the next, like, year, yeah. Nothing we know of, you know, nothing major, nothing crazy. I would not tell people to buy a Switch right now at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, will we see it? I think we'll see the reveal in June. Like, I think we're at this stage where the last major title exclusive to the Switch that isn't a remake or remaster came out over a month ago with Princess Peach.
Right.
Like, if there are no new Switch games from Nintendo, like, if they're holding all first-party titles that aren't remakes or remasters until the Switch 2, we're in that period where, like, okay, let's pull the curtains back, show what we're working on, and then continue to trickle out games that are remakes and remasters. Like, I don't think Thousand Year Door is the last remake or remaster we're going to see for the Switch this year. I think there will be a few more. And considering if the Switch 2 is backwards compatible, and hopefully Nintendo has figured out how, like, they've looked at what Xbox and PlayStation have done with, like, sort of, Switch 2 versions of Switch games, like performance mm-hmm. patches. I know Nintendo knows how to do patches.
Yeah.
I know they haven't done. They're not a performance patch type of company. They are a, you know, put it on a new cartridge and sell it for $80 type company.
Yeah.
You know, so
they're a, we don't go on sale company.
Exactly. Like, do we, like, if they released, say, what's the rumors? Like, the rumors would be, like, if they released, finally released Wind Waker HD and Twilight Princess HD on the Switch, would they do a performance patch to have it hit 4K on the Switch 2, or would they just sell it for $80 again? I don't know. Probably sell it for $80 again.
Sell it for $80 again. Yeah, 100%.
So I hope Nintendo has kind of looked at what PlayStation and Xbox are doing, but they might not even care. They might just be like, no, like, you can buy it again in a year or two. It's not a big deal. It's like, but it is. We'll see. We'll see what they do, but I hope they know what a performance patch is, and we'll get some of those.
Well, I mean, if they are announcing it in June, we've only got about a month to wait because it's already May. Who knew? So, yeah, you don't have that long to wait.
No, I'm excited. I think Jeff Keighley's starting up his, like, his summer games machine, and he was saying, like, oh, only 6 weeks until our showcase. And I'm like, man, that is, we are six weeks from early June.
Huh. Yeah. Where is the time gone?
I know.
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to kill some time, you can head on over to bit.ly/TGI Discord to join the conversation about anything we talked about today or anything you want to talk about at all. You can also visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can follow us over on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is Nora Murphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn. And remember, tune in next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.